EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, good.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is
such.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Hello everyone and welcome to the show, and a very happy Easter to you all. In tonight's show we are joined by Kaz Clark with her encounter from February of 2016 that occurred in the village of Penturk in the south of Wales. Kaz and her neighbour witnessed a huge pyramid UFO that jettisoned a smaller green craft. They were also approached by two smaller barrel-shaped objects. But we're going to begin tonight with Ben from South Carolina's witness submission. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find the link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
On a Thursday in the very late 90s or early 2000s, before camera phones, it was just a typical day with my friends that lived across the street at my house in Simpsonville, South Carolina. I was a young teenager, and the thing I remember about that day is I had just gotten a leather chain wallet with a chain that hooked on my belt. I got my wallet because I thought my friends' leather chain wallets were cool. It was part of the whole grunge thing. I got into that real hard. For some reason, I can't remember why I walked outside, but as soon as I hit the street in my neighborhood, I looked up and saw this silver smooth-edged triangle.
And it was spinning. It was in a spinning motion.
I wanted to get film of it and immediately looked for the tape recorder to get it on film and simultaneously told all my friends about it, but I both couldn't get the tape recorder ready in time while only spending about 2 minutes max inside hoping to see more of the UFO. I went back outside to find it was gone. It was a metallic triangle. The edges seemed to be 3D curved and smooth with no indentions or symbols I could make out. It looked to be completely smooth, silver, and metallic.
I'm fairly sure my house faced east at the time where we lived, and it was traveling going to my left. So it must have been traveling north, moving with just complete ease. It seemed to be going very slow through the sky. About the same speed as a plane just cruising, you know, going a little over 100 miles per hour, maybe 110, 115 miles per hour. And one more detail, this craft was completely silent.
No one believed me. I believe now it was one of our own, a man-made UAP.
I am the only witness. I have not changed my story in all the time I've told it.
But that's the story. And, man, it was real, you know.
Hello, Kaz, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick. Thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Thank you for coming on today and sharing all this for our listeners. Calling from Wales.
Penturk in Wales, yes.
Just over the border from me. Now, Kaz, this event started in 2016?
That's right, yes.
Okay, would you like to share with the listeners what you experienced, please, Kaz?
Oh, my goodness. If this was just a UFO sighting, then I probably wouldn't have said anything at all. But this, what I'm about to say has the most profound implications for us, our children and our planet. This started for me on Tuesday the 23rd of February 2016, when I noticed a very small grey twin propeller plane flying in circles over my village. And for me, this wasn't really unusual. I've got RAF St. Athan just down the road, and we have military aircraft quite regularly, but we don't have them stop and start flying in circles. So anyway, the first day, I didn't really pay attention to it. And it was the next day, on the Wednesday, the 24th, when one of my neighbours came out of his house cursing because this little plane had kept him awake all night. And it was then really that we started to notice the behaviour of this plane. It was very low and it was very slow. And I just remember thinking, if it goes any slower, it's going to fall out the sky. After a few hours of this, another plane, almost identical to the first, would turn up and the first plane would leave, and that plane would then continue the same flight pattern. And this, all the Wednesday night then, that's all I could hear. Every 15 minutes, this little propeller plane flying over the top of my house. So on the Thursday then, we'd all decided, we'd written to the Ministry of Defence and nobody had said anything about these planes. Nobody knew anything about them. We wrote to the local mainstream media. They didn't know anything about them. There were no military exercises listed. And it was quite clear that they were watching for something. Now, my neighbour had thought, well, perhaps they're watching for Russian planes. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it was only the week before our RAF had turned away two military Russian bombers from our airspace. So we decided that if they were still there later, that we'd go out and watch with them. But I really didn't expect to see what happened. And I'm still in shock and awe of what I witnessed, because I didn't believe in UFOs. I didn't believe in portals or stargates. And if somebody had said that to me then, I would have laughed. It got to about 2 a.m. in the morning of the 26th of February. And I was just about to go into my house. It was freezing cold, even though we had the fire pit lit. And I was, to be honest, getting just a little bit bored of watching this plane, which by now was flying figure eights instead of circles. When I heard what I thought was a missile, it was really loud. So I ran back out of my house into my garden as this E-3 Sentry plane, an enormous plane, went over the top of my house. And my neighbour exclaimed, "That's an E-3 Sentry plane." Well, that meant nothing to me because I'm really not a plane spotter, you know. But it had this huge mushroom thing on its back. And this E3 Sentry started to circle. Now, I have to explain where I live. I live on top of a mountain, and you can see in every direction but north, because that's where the actual peak of the mountain is. And you can see for miles. And this E3 Sentry wasn't doing small circles. It was doing big circles, and it took about 5 minutes to go around once. Seven times the E3 Sentry went around. My neighbour said, well, perhaps it's taxiing for the airport, but the only airport we've got that's big enough to take that plane is Cardiff International, and you wouldn't have a military aircraft there. Well, that's when the first red light became visible high above the trees behind my house. So I shouted for Donna, one of my other neighbours who was watching with us that night. She'd gone into the house to make hot drinks. And behind my house, there's nothing except farmland that ebbs away from you. And ran out to the fire bar gate that was there. Dave, my neighbour who was with me, had run into the field and I'd pulled him back because I didn't mind watching, but from a safe distance and with all the military that were around, I was quite scared, to be honest. And the E3 Sentry started to fly up and turn and back again above us. There were five other aircraft. I couldn't tell you what they were at that time, but they were about 5 miles out flying in a circle all the way around us. And this one red light turned into three, coming in point first through a black veil. There was no distortion in the air, no big cloud of smoke, no bright lights, nothing like that, just like it was coming through a veil into our world. And those three red lights on the, it turned out to be a giant pyramid. This thing was enormous. I mean, so big that when I looked at the bottom, I couldn't see the top from 200 yards away. That's how big. And the leading set of six lights on its leading edge as it came in were brighter than the other lights around it. It seemed to have this curved bottom to it. And as it came in point first, it was turning very, very slowly anti-clockwise. And as it did so, it came down in a pendulum motion. And when it was in the upright position, it's fired this green object out the top like it had been fired out of a cannon really fast. And it skipped over to my left-hand side and stopped above this thicket of trees. It was really bright. I don't know what shape it was. It was brighter than the moonlight. And we had a full moon that night and just rocked gently backwards and forwards, almost like it was surveying what was going on around it. Anyway, this pyramid is still turning very slowly anti-clockwise and moving back almost the way that it came. And I stood on the five-bar gate to get a better look through the bare trees. And I said to Dave, it's landing, it's landing. I was quite excited. When the truth was, it wasn't landing. The land itself was coming up to meet it, because that is the foot of the Garth Mountain, and the field was rising there. And the closest corner to the ground emitted like this fire-coloured hand of lightning. It wasn't thin, streaky lightning that we're used to. It was thick, like fingers. Reached out, I said, to touch the ground, but I think it was trying to stop itself from touching the ground. And the whole thing lit up really brightly. I mean, it was so bright that around the really brightest lights, you could see the texture of the craft to show that it was a solid shape and not, you know, just a string of lights, for example. And I heard the military planes coming, two big C-17 American propeller planes, two engines on each wing. And I looked up just as they flew over the top of me, and they were wingtip to wingtip, two of them, flying towards where this pyramid was. And the green object that had been fired out of the pyramid first shot across and in front of the plane so fast, it could have quite easily outrun those planes if it wanted to, the speed that it could move. And there were two other aircraft. They must have broken out of the circle that was around us. Two Hercules aircraft, C-130s, I think they are. Two of those, and they too came in behind the two C-17s. And between them, they took up a really wide airspace with this green object just rocking backwards and forwards in front of them. And it fired three really bright strobes at these planes and seemed to get excited that our planes were following it. And it skipped away, skipped and bobbed and skipped and bobbed towards Llantrisen. It wasn't in a hurry. It was like it was deliberately drawing the planes away from the pyramid. And the pyramid went back the way it came. Now, whilst I was looking at the bottom of the pyramid, Dave was looking at the top. And he said he saw 15 or 20 other objects that were jettisoned from this pyramid that all seemed to sort of mingle with each other or dance with each other around the top of this pyramid. And I have to say, I didn't see any of that because I was so fixated on it touching the ground. But after the pyramid had gone and the planes had chased after this really bright green object, it was quite surreal. You could see all the outlines of the fuselages and engines and wings all bathed in this green light. Towards Llantrisen, the E3 Sentry was still up there. And Dave and I were approached by two of these barrel-shaped objects about the size of a smart car. They were smooth on the outside. Like, I want to say they were made of glass, but because I don't know, I didn't touch them. And capped with black caps on the top and on the bottom. And one of them, they were both coming from my right-hand side. And one of them stopped about 20 feet away from me and about 20 feet up. And I stared at it just for a few seconds because I wanted the details. I wanted to know. I wanted to see. And all the insides were moving. I've described like white noise on a TV screen, but on a red background. But it was more than that. They were turning in on themselves like these things were alive. And then I looked to see where the other one was, and that one hadn't stopped. And that by that time was right over the top of us and stopped. Both of these objects were red in color. And I didn't know what else to do. So I waved. I mean, that has to be in the universal signal for, I don't mean you any harm. And it changed color from tail light red to like traffic light green. And I could see even clearer the insides of this thing moving around like they were the essence of life themselves. And I felt like we were communicated with, but that's only a feeling. I couldn't get tested for that when I took the polygraph, because polygraphs have to be based on fact. So I could only be tested on what I saw. And I passed three times, not just once. And after we felt it scan us, and the only way that I could describe that was like someone had reached in and just took the fear away from me. It was like, it was almost like being touched by the hand of God, if that makes sense. But that's how it felt, elation almost. And the red object, which was still red, had remained sentry the whole time, was still there. The green object that was above us, the green barrel now, started to move away to my right-hand side. And the red object started to move away to my left-hand side and disappeared. Well, disappeared, or I just couldn't see it anymore. And the E3 sentry was still above us. And it felt quite surreal when everything was gone, that this had just happened. And we walked back to my house, both of us in polar opposites to each other. Dave was absolutely rigid with fear, talking through gritted teeth. And I was the opposite, energized. I had to tell someone, anyone that would know what to do with this information, because I wasn't part of any UFO groups. I didn't know anyone. Anyway, just as I got back to my house, we heard an enormous explosion coming from the direction of Llantrisant. And we now know that this thing was shot down. And we know this because the military did a meticulous metal search on Llantrisant Common. The smoke, the smell of sulfur in the air, the canopies of all the trees being broken out where this thing had come down and through the trees, the impact site, the military being on the ground there and taking something from the woods backwards and forwards. They went from St. Athan to the woods at 4:30 in the morning. The explosion was so big, it shook patients awake in their beds in the hospital, which was very close. It set all the car alarms off in the street. It measured on the Richter scale 40 miles away in Monmouth. And the Ministry of Defence's explanation was that this was a fake incendiary device. And witnesses on the ground have told us, and it was also published in the Daily Mirror newspaper, that the explosion came from the air. The smoke was falling from the air so thick that it not only resembled a foggy night, but was going in through the vents and the windows into the corridors of the hospital. Moments later, an Apache helicopter had to do an emergency landing at Cardiff International Airport, where you wouldn't expect to find an Apache helicopter. We went out to the entry field the same morning, but later that morning. And it was snowing. Snowing in the field. It wasn't snowing in the surrounding fields, just in that field. And all the bushes were dead. All the trees were dead. That this, like it, they had the life sucked out of them. And this was also the same at the impact site too. All of the trees were dead. And a really strong smell, a bit like fireworks, but also a bit like burning rubber. And the scuff marks and burn marks that were left on the trees weren't black, as you'd expect, but they were white. It was most bizarre. And I only went out for my own curiosity because I wanted to know what had happened to this object. But there's been a huge investigation into this case. The EMF radiation that was found in the field when they first started their investigation, 18 months after the event, the radiation was so high in that field where the pyramid came in, it was the equivalent of being microwaved. 18 months. So what was it like on the day? You know, our military and our governments need to be honest with us about the seriousness of what's really going on, because they attacked something that in my mind was not hostile. There was no hand of friendship extended, no attempt to communicate. It was almost like both sides knew what to expect. This has happened before. And our military are engaging and shooting these things down. And we're not even supposed to know they exist.
The crash site, you've taken pictures and you've taken video of the area. And there was quite extensive damage at the time to the landscape, trees.
Yes, all the canopies of all the trees had been taken out. And the debris trail lay left and right of us. And so it was quite easy to follow the debris trail to the impact site. And the Forestry Commission has felled all of those trees. So we asked them via Freedom of Information why they did this. And they told us that it was larch disease, or Phytophthora rumorum, it's called. And they have very strict protocols in how to deal with larch disease. They have to do what's called a sanitized felling, which means that everything has to be removed. And they have to wear coveralls on their feet and on their bodies. They have to wash all their equipment. It has to be a certified person to take this timber away, and it can't be reused. It has to be burned. Now, the land has to be left free and fallow for a minimum period of 3 years. And I did a little bit of research, and there was a place in Birmingham called, I think it's called Licky Woods or Likey Woods, a beautiful woodland walk, or it used to be. And they really did have larch disease. And within 7 days, the entire place had been cleared, left like a barren wasteland. There wasn't a twig on the ground, nothing. And there were warning signs up everywhere. Wash your dog paws, your boots, your bike wheels, so as not to spread this pathogen, which has started to affect other plant life. Well, what they did in Smilog Woods was the complete opposite. There was no warning signs. They did not do a sanitized felling. Everything is just left there, all the branches, all the debris, everything. And furthermore, they replanted it within 18 months of the event. The land certainly was not left free and fallow, as it should have been. Now, after the event here, we had some men and women come and camp in the fields. I didn't know who they were. In fact, I didn't know they were there at all initially, because they'd camped behind this thicket of trees in a field. And it was only really via my local Pentuck herb that I learned they were there at all. And they'd been given different stories as to who they were. One person had been told they were a fracking survey team, which didn't go down well in the village. And somebody else had been told that they were Vodafone. So that kind of tweaked my curiosity. And as much as I knew in my heart they were here because of the UFO, at that time we couldn't prove it, but RAF Northwood were kind enough to put it all together for us via a Freedom of Information, including the planes that were here before. So I'd gone over to the field to one of my friends under the guise of taking my dog for a walk. And we met two soldiers wearing digital camos carrying guns with live rounds. And they told us they were doing a military exercise. Well, I'd gone around the corner into the field where they were camped. And you can take the man out of the army, but you can't take the army out of the man. All of their tents, all of their bivvies were in perfect straight lines. All the drawstrings were exactly the same. And initially, I'd started to walk around the perimeter of the field, but I wanted to get closer. So I said to my mate, oh, come on, let's cut across the field. So we'd cut across the field, and this huge dog, which I now know to be some kind of pit bull type dog, had come running out of the tents towards us and started to circle us. So I said to Steve, my friend, pick my dog up, because I didn't want her to get bitten. And instantly, I shouted, I could see two men in one of the tents, and I shouted and said, you're no country boys, are you? You know, it's nearly lambing season. Put your dog on a lead. With that, he instantly called his dog back to him. And I heard what come from the tent. Well, that was my in, if you like. It gave me the excuse to go and speak to them. And to be honest with you, Nick, I wish I'd been braver. I wish I'd asked more questions. But I was on my own, really, in all of this. I'd gone to the tent and asked them who they were. And they told me they were Vodafone. So within 10 minutes, I've been told two different stories. They were doing a military exercise, or they were Vodafone. Well, one of the guys in the tent, he was in his, I'd say, late 50s, early 60s, Silver Fox, DA-type haircut, and gold-rimmed half-moon glasses, in military uniform, and had some kind of laptop device in front of him, but it was twice the size of a laptop. It was in a case, and he had to use two hands to close the lid. And when I asked them that what they were doing, they just said, oh, it's some field tests or something. So with that, we walked down, further down, and there was another team wearing white paper forensic suits. And they were doing a fingertip search of the field where this pyramid had come in. And when they saw us, every single one of them stopped what they were doing and stood up and stared at us. I've described it like some weird cult 60s movie, until we were out of sight. Everyone just like zombies almost. They just stood up and stared at you until you were gone, and then they continued what they were doing. Now, the people in the white forensic suits didn't seem to communicate very much with these people that were wearing, well, khaki trousers, but they had these red jackets on that had this emblem on. And I'd not seen this emblem before until I saw it on the news.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
I don't know if anybody remembers when they sent the worms up into space. And it was a test to see what gene switches off regarding astronauts losing muscle mass in space. And worms are just muscles, so it was quite easy for them to actually see which gene it was that switched off. And it was on the news, and I saw the emblem. And it was the same emblem these people had on their jackets. And they too had one of those big laptop devices. And there was another one on top of a Jeep, at the end of the trail, and they had one of those laptop devices, and they had aerials and satellite dishes and all sorts of other equipment around them. And we actually think that they were triangulating a satellite into that area. Now, since the event, as I say, there's been a huge investigation, which has actually proved not only has the Ministry of Defense lied on an official government document, not once, but three times. But we've had other groups. We had Richard Oliver, who runs Paranormal Now. He's been a paranormal investigator for over 20 years, absolutely brilliant, came over with a spirit box. Now, I have to be open-minded because of what I've seen. Now, without any prompting at all, a message came through, clear as a bell. Your air agents are listening here. What is that? What is that? And one of them perished in the crash. That was the other thing that was said. There was no prompting at all. And it's really opened my eyes. And scares me a lot that the military are shooting these things down without provocation. I mean, they had enough firepower up there to take over a small country. 20 gunships, C-130s, C-17s, E-3 Sentries, fast jets. We've got a witness in Betwas in Bridgend that saw fast jets pursuing a cluster of green lights at high speed, heading west. So whatever this was, the NOTAM that they put in, the Ministry of Defense put in at 9 o'clock the next day, was just to encompass the Penturk and Llantrisson areas. But they exceeded that. They went into Neath. They went into Port Talbot. They went into Swansea. They went out to sea. They went 50 miles outside of this so-called NOTAM. There was no prior notification. The police, well, it took them 3 years to get back to us. And apparently every police officer that was working that night has since retired. But they would have had to have brought people in from outside the area. The fire brigade weren't told anything. National Resources for Wales, local government weren't told anything. But the Royal Mint, and it was actually implied that the Royal Mint had something to do with this exercise, even though it wasn't an exercise. So we wrote to the Royal Mint under a Freedom of Information request. And had we had done it at the time, I don't think we would have got an answer because the security for the Royal Mint was done by the Ministry of Defence. And in June of 2016, it was actually taken over by G4S. And they were kind enough to tell us that they received a telephone call from the Welsh Extremist Counterterrorism Unit. Now, when we did some research into them, turns out they're a privately owned company paid for with taxpayers' money that can never be subjected to a Freedom of Information request and yet can hide behind Section 26 and are in charge of our military and our police force. That's so wrong that they can't be questioned at all.
Penturk's a very small village, isn't it? It's not very big.
That's right, yeah.
What was the talk amongst the locals?
Well, I think everybody had heard the plane beforehand, everyone, but the craft itself and the others that came out of it were completely silent. I mean, this event happened at around 20 to 3 in the morning. And unless you were up, you wouldn't have seen it. You would not have seen it. And the planes literally flew over and away. And as I say, we get military aircraft all the time. That small grey plane that had been here with its partner plane for 3 days and three nights had moved from Penturk over to Smilog Woods in Llantrisant and had not just dropped in airspeed and altitude and was circling the exact impact site. And Smilog Woods is quite large. You know, it would take an entire team, possibly the best part of a week, to search the whole place. But to be there at the exact impact site and also tire tracks that prove the military were on the ground there, gunshots heard by a veteran that was in the hospital that night, what were they shooting at? What did they take from Smilog Woods backwards and forwards to RAF St. Athan at 4:30 in the morning over a civilian area next to a hospital? So the talk in the village, other than the planes and my neighbour and I, who saw the whole thing, there is potentially a third witness in the village that saw it. And he's very reluctant to come forward because the man's a pilot. And it's understandable why he won't come forward, because I think it's quite common knowledge that pilots are grounded if they say they see these things. I didn't know something that big could fly, but our military knew they were coming without any doubt at all.
Because they seem to have got there very quickly, didn't they?
They set an ambush for it. They trained for it the week before, and they set an ambush for it. They had the planes there waiting in this circle around us. We saw the Apache helicopters coming low across the fields, flying in a pyramid formation, one above two, with their slow pulsing red lights going out in front of them. And you could see all the grass and all the hedges and trees and that being pushed flat by the force of their rotor blades as they went from my left to my right on an interception course with the green object that had gone in front of us to the west. And then we heard the explosion, so it was quite clear. We could only see two Apache helicopters after that because the third one had to do the emergency landing at Cardiff. There's a huge amount of evidence. You know, I can't go into it all. We really don't have the time for all of it. But if anybody wants to look it up, it's called the Penturk UFO incident in 2016. And so far, we've hundreds of pages of evidence, you know, everything from video and photographs, along with the Freedom of Information requests that show all the lies and contradictions from the Ministry of Defence, EMF testing, seismological data, polygraph tests. As I say, I've done three polygraph tests and passed them all. And thankfully, I'm not the only witness.
So there's four objects. We have the pyramid.
Yes.
Pyramid craft, the large object. We then have the green orb, which came out.
Yes.
Came out. And then we have the red barrels.
Yes.
Now, did you see how they actually arrived?
No, I didn't. I didn't. One minute there was nothing, and the next minute they were there coming across the field towards us.
Okay. And as they got close, you said that it seemed like the inside was alive.
Yes.
Like white noise.
Yeah, but the white noise wasn't flat like it is on a TV. It was turning in on itself. Like they were, I've said before, like the essence of life, like they had consciousness, that they were communicating and they were intelligent. I felt, well, I heard a voice in my head, a man's voice in my head, not my own voice. Tell the world what you witnessed here. And I said, I will. And that's the, that is the God's honest truth. That's what I felt it say to me. And that's what I want to do. This was real. And the world needs to know what is really going on. You know, since this event, we've now got Space Force, an armed Space Force. France have got an armed Space Force, along with machine guns on their satellites. And I think Senator Richard Blumenthal said it the best and most recently to General Dunford at the Senate hearing for Space Force, when he said that the biggest thing is that we're not talking about because it's classified, is that we know what they are doing. Our adversaries know what they are doing, and they know that we know what they are doing. But the American people have no idea. And if they knew about the threat that is growing and exists in space, there would be some great concern.
Some considerable concern, absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you considered maybe having regression?
I would love to have regression because I've always been quite strong and independent all my life. And this hour and a half, when it was pointed out to me that I'd, and it was only really when we got the timeline of the explosion that I realized, oh my God, I have lost an hour and a half in time. Because for me, I was only out of that gate maybe 10 minutes. And by the time I got back to my house and then heard the big kaboom, you know, it was a huge explosion. Clontrison's 5 miles away. This thing was enormous and really loud. That for me, it happened almost instantly. But to know that that explosion was at 4:21 and this event started at 2:20, where did that time go? And that scares me. That really scares me because I don't like not knowing. You know, I did suffer and I have been affected quite profoundly by what happened out there. You know, I had post-traumatic stress. I didn't even know I had post-traumatic stress because it was happening to me. You know, my emotions were all over the place. I found myself really angry and challenging. And it was only when I looked back, I realized, oh my God, what did it turn me into? You know, thankfully I'm not like that now, but it is a process. A very wise woman once told me that you have to go through. Fortunately, I think I've come out the other side, but the world needs to know what is going on because right now we're not even told they exist and we're shooting them down without provocation, without mercy. This is outrageous.
The world certainly has to know, you're right, especially this major incident.
Absolutely. Because for me, the military are not typical of human beings. You know, there is no love or compassion. Their only interest is in weaponry and technology. I don't want them representing me as a human being in that way, but that's what's happening right now. We should be told so that we know, because if they were hostile, my neighbor and I wouldn't be here. We would be dead. And they didn't show us any hostility at all. Our military pursued them and shot them down without mercy and set an ambush for them. They knew they were coming. And we should be told who are hostile and who are not, because clearly there are some out there that are. And we should be told the difference so that people don't put themselves at risk, you know. And for me that night, they were not hostile, but we shot them down anyway. And this affects us all. What are our military doing? What have they done? You know, this is an interdimensional race, because somebody have said to me, you know, oh, well, don't you think it decloaked? So no, it didn't decloak. If it was cloaked, why didn't it stay cloaked? If it knew it was surrounded by military aircraft, it emerged into our world. I described it like approaching a vehicle in fog. And first you see its headlights and you think, oh, car. And then as you get a bit closer, you think, oh, no. It's got other lights around it. It's a lorry. And then as you go past it, you see, oh my God, it's the Coca-Cola lorry, you know, that type of thing. That's what it was like when it was coming in. And it went back the way it came. And as I say, the EMF in that field was like being microwaved 18 months after the event.
And of course, they took all the evidence of the trees. All that was destroyed.
Yes, but not before we got photographs and video of it.
Yeah, to our listeners, if you want to check out the photographs that Kaz kindly gave to me, head to the UFO Chronicles website. That's great, Kaz. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners.
Well, I think, you know, tell everyone. tell everyone you know, because the world needs to know. It's time. You know, I've said before, I'm afraid because I've been threatened by the mainstream and told to stay silent. I've been threatened by the military with perhaps a fatal car accident that extended to my family. You know, people need to know, and being afraid, and I am afraid, is not a good enough reason not to come forward. We need to stand up and be counted. So many people want the truth, but no one's prepared to stand up, you know.
That's true.
But yeah, it's important. People need to know there is a war going on. Thank you for inviting me on your show. You know, it's such a big incident for me and life-changing for me. And I think, you know, it's time that our governments did tell us what's really going on. I mean, when the military came out here and said to me, their excuse was, well, people have got enough to worry about without being attacked by aliens. It's not good enough when we're not even told they exist. You know,
that's right.
I think we need to be told so people don't put themselves in danger or know the difference.
It's been great talking to you, Kaz. Okay.
And you, Nick. I wish you well.
That is all for tonight. Keep yourself connected and updated on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Special thanks to Kaz for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.